is Katie. This is Classically Black Podcast,
where we talk all things classical music and being black in the profession.
With trap beats playing in the background. Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. Okay. Well, jumping right in to the news this week.
Do it.
The Oscars happened last week, I guess. Yep. Last week. And The Last Repair Shop, which we talked about sometime last month, won for Best Documentary Short. So, shout out
you
to
you saw Miss Mama's in her dress.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, what is it? She's like, take notes. This is what it's like to be that girl.
Right. I know she had fun when she went to school the next day or whenever. Right. Was the Oscars on a Sunday? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So, period.
She said, my agent said you got to talk to her.
Right. Period.
I love that for her. What is, like, she'll never forget that.
Yeah. So congrats to them. Maestro, which we'll get to later, did not take home any of its nominations. So, but
what was it nominated for?
It was nominated for a lot. It was definitely nominated for Best Picture. Both the leads were nominated for Best Actress and Best Actor. It was nominated for Best Costume or Makeup. I think Makeup. It might have been both.
I can see Makeup. Yeah.
Well, let me see, actually. I have it right here. All of its nominations for the Academy Awards. Yeah. Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, and Best Sound.
I can see for one of a couple of those why I didn't get it, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Okay. Next up, what else we got? Something for the composers. Hey, girls. The Find Your People program, which is a program from Color Creative, which is Issa Rae's management company, one that she owns. They have a program called Find Your People, and it's a space for emerging creators to build community and develop the voices of the future while enabling women and people of color creators to reach their greatest potential. So they're looking for a lot of different categories. Of course, we're talking about it because one of the categories that they added this year is composers. So the deadline is April 12th, and of course we will link all the information that you need in the description. So this is specifically also if you want to compose like for film, because some of the other categories are like directors, producers, film editors, that sort of thing. So if that's what you're looking to and you want to meet Issa, period, right, I'm gonna give me all my staff paper.
But that's the thing, she's not looking for staff paper, so
yeah,
read carefully, because Miss Jope strict over there.
It's a capital R requirements. So
yeah, it's very much like you've done this and you need to find other people who are doing it. So
hopefully it applies to y'all. Mm-hmm. Next, I just saw this. Apparently, Esa-Pekka Salonen is stepping down from his position as music director of the San Francisco Symphony. He was announced as music director in 2018, but didn't start until the fall of 2020. Terrible time to start. And he announced that they will not be, they meaning both sides, I guess. Not like they ain't fired him, but they won't be renewing his 5-year contract. So it'll come to a close in June 2025. He said, I have decided not to continue as music director of the San Francisco Symphony because I do not share the same goals for the future of the institution as the Board of Governors does. I'm sincerely looking forward to the many exciting programs we have planned for my final season as music director and am proud to continue working with the world-class musicians of the San Francisco Symphony. Apparently, according to the New York Times, it says... they said the rift between Salonen and the board appeared to be over efforts to cut costs, which include reducing the number of concerts and commissions, as well as putting tours on hold. Ooh, everybody is feeling it. Orchestras are kind of across the board, I feel like, are feeling it.
Wait, so what side, is it clear what side he's on? He wants to keep it and the board wants to trim it, or the other way around?
I'm sure he wants to keep and they want to trim. Because I feel like as a conductor, you're not even concerned about, it's not even his purview.
Yeah.
Whether or not to, I mean, creatively it would be, but not cutting costs. No, like I would, because it says it would be over efforts to cut costs. And if he, like, it would be kind of weird if he was going in there, you know, we need to cut costs around here. I feel like they'll be looking at you.
No, I could see, the reason why I asked that, because I could see, I mean, it's probably rare, but I could see a music director, especially like if you just got to an organization and they're like, we always do this and we always do this and we've always done this. And you're like, well, what if we did something different just to whatever? I could see that.
I could see that creatively, but not financially, because it's just not his job.
Yeah, not financially, but just, or wanting to try their stuff that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because depending on the orchestra, like, they might be, I mean, maybe not the orchestra that size, actually. Because I'm going to say that those can be in way more close quarters than not, but not the orchestra that size is not cool. Yeah. You probably don't even know what's going on, to be honest.
Yeah, this says it's over efforts to cut costs. And so when he says that his vision doesn't align, it seems like he wants the freedom to be able to do certain things, and they don't have the budget. They either don't have the budget or don't want to spend the money. That's what it seems like. So that sucks. I was wondering if he's going to go back to LA, because Dudamel is staying through the 2025-26 season. So there'd be a little, but I mean, Especa Solomon could fill a year of engagements if needed without a full-time gig like that. So he could be making a U-turn going back to LA. We'll see.
Oh, wait, he was at LA before the Dudamel?
So
I wonder what he's gonna do. You girls are so messy.
He be over there sometimes. So
subbing or whatever it's called.
Yeah, like guest conductor stuff.
Yeah.
And what I think I just saw something about Seattle. Still no word about music director over there. That was another one where I feel like that's just a trend of, like, sometimes conductors, of course they want to do what they want to do, and the actual logistics of running the orchestra are, to be fair, not their concern, but also, like, they need to reconcile those two things at some point. Mm-hmm. So still no word. That was 2021 when Thomas Dalsgaard quit in the middle of the season. Not even the
beginning.
I wonder
how the musicians feel about that. Like, especially those are, like, you play, like, probably every day of the week except for one. It's like, you probably want someone that you're constantly seeing. But do they not, or are they indifferent? They're like, girl, I gotta feed my kids. Anybody can get up there and wave a stick. Like, I wonder. I'm not saying that's what conducting is. Please leave me alone. I'm just saying, like, I wonder how they feel about that. That's 3 years without a music director. Because I feel like on a very small scope, when my home church's current pastor, he's been there for, I don't know, 12, 13 years, ever since I was a senior in high school. And, but we went through a period of like 2 years or something like that with no pastor. It gets old. It's like, so who in charge? Like, every Sunday is something different. So, and that's just like on a very, very small scale. She's talking about like your job, are you there multiple days a week? It's like, who in charge this week? Like, what are we doing now? Like, I wonder how they feel. Somebody say something. Let us know.
Yeah, and I know I wasn't crazy. 4 days ago, they announced their 2024-25 season. So I feel like if they had a music director to announce, they would have done it.
Yeah.
With the season announcement, so hopefully 2025-26. We'll see. In other news, also some other applications coming up from Sphinx. One of them being their audition intensives. They're having two of them coming up. One is for strings and harp. in partnership with New World Symphony in Miami Beach, Florida. That's May 19th to May 23rd. And then for Woodwinds, Brass, and Percussion, they're doing another two-day intensive in partnership with the U.S. Navy Band in D.C., and that's May 30th to June 3rd. And they will include 2 days of comprehensive training, lessons, group classes, and performance psychology sessions. So we will link the applications for that, as well as the application for submitting a session proposal for Sphinx Connect 2025. So that deadline is coming up. It's March 31st. So if you would like to have a panel or a talk of some sorts at Sphinx Connect 2025, then yeah, submit that. I'm gonna move one of these to next week because it was only 11 minutes. But it's fine. Speaking of orchestras and budgets, the American Youth Symphony just announced its permanent closure effective. Whoa. Yep. Effective Friday, March 15th. After 59 years. So
that's what?
Crazy. I know, I just had to do a double take. I was like, wow. And then not y'all sending that on Wednesday and closing on Friday. they were like, we actually don't want to take any questions. We don't want to hear any.
Literally, do not call us.
The number's disconnected. So,
what?
Yep. They have cited financial challenges and the inability to sustain operations. If you don't know, AYS, American Youth Symphony, is a pre-professional orchestra in Los Angeles. If you go to school in LA, like USC, Colburn, UCLA, other schools out here, a lot of college students play in AYS. You audition, get a seat, play a season. It's just like an orchestra, and it is a good opportunity to earn money mm-hmm. as a music student while actually like getting to play your instrument, playing with people from other schools, and being in like a rigorous environment. So sad to see that go. Its final concert, AYS Up Close, took place last month on February 25th. Their board chairman, Kevin Dretzka, said, despite our best efforts, the challenges of maintaining our operations have become insurmountable. COVID-19 amplified AYS's unsustainable financial infrastructure. We have exhausted every effort and hope the larger orchestral industry and classical music philanthropic community take note to shore up these important pre-professional orchestras like AYS, which directly benefit them. Which is very true, because I mean, we used to have two pre-professional orchestras in LA, and they're both gone now. Young Musicians Foundation Debut Orchestra used to exist when I was like in high school, and they're not here anymore. Now AYS is gone, so I don't know. Those are the only two I knew of over here.
Yeah, earlier when I was like, they meant it. Like, I clicked on their little like 2023-2024 season button. It said 404. I can't even look to see what y'all did first. Like, that it's still the 15th right now. I can't just look, because at first I clicked audition. I'm like, okay, this is C. Okay, fine, it's gone. I can't look at what y'all did. I can't look at 2021, 2022 just to see what y'all played. Y'all were sitting, it's not even in the business in LA yet. And y'all pulled the plug. They meant it.
Yeah.
They probably closed on Wednesday.
They said if we cancel our Squarespace right now, we can get our prorated it's not funny.
It's not giving funny. They close on Wednesday.
Right. I bet you I'll get a bounce back if I try to reply. Well, no, because this is their publicist, so dang, not an @gmail.
Oh, they down bad. They was right.
I mean, they right there with us, so
Okay, we haven't been around for 59 years. So.
Speak for yourself, girl. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I mean, I was thinking about that quote from their, was it board chair?
Mm-hmm.
About like hoping that other orchestras in the industry take note to shore up pre-professional orchestras. I was like, yeah, I feel like that's a place in the pipeline that I haven't been around forever. I don't know what the history of them has been in terms of like how many there have been. Was there ever a time where the landscape of pre-professional orchestras was abundant? Because I've only ever known two here, but that is kind of an important part of the pipeline, even though I will say a lot of people in AYS were actively in school, but that's sort of like middle part where people who have maybe just left school or something and they still need to be playing and all of that and being paid. I feel like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of investment, of course, at the beginning of the pipeline, a lot of focus there, of like getting instruments in hands. But like we've talked about how there's a lot of people who are just not, they don't get out of school ready for a job. So, and they will continue not to, apparently.
I'm curious, like, what in their saving efforts, because they probably realized, like, oh, shoot, we going down, like, at least a year ago. And I'm wondering, like, what their saving efforts look like. Like, were people in the community with money interested in saving them? Because I wonder, I feel like pre-professional orchestras will help, like, you know, profession wide. And I'm wondering, like, when they were like, even institutions in their backyard, like LA Phil, LACO, like, were they interested in helping? Because that's good information to know. Because if they're interested in helping, then somebody needs to go start you a pre-professional orchestra. Like, that could be lit.
And I wonder, I mean, a lot of orchestras, they have their flagship either fellowship programs or youth orchestra programs, and I wonder if they, like, that's kind of where we draw the line. Stuff that has our name on it, because... Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they even see it as, like, once you start talking about like big orchestras that like will have the money, I wonder if they even see it as a pipeline. Because when they get on, when they start taking auditions, or holding auditions, they get people from all over the world. And I wonder if they even see it as a priority to like, let's invest in these pre-professional musicians that are in LA, because that will help
probably
our orchestra. Because it's not like LA Phil ain't got to beg nobody to come over here and audition anyway.
That's what I was going to say. And I feel like, it, especially in this time where, like, it's so hard to win a job because the talent just keeps getting better and better. There's literally no orchestra that's begging for talent. And, like, they could act like they are and have 200 tellers come down and nobody get the job. Like, they could act like it. But the fact that you even had 200 tellers coming to your audition, like, this one audition I applied for a couple months ago, and I was like, Viola number like 60 something. Here, I tweeted about it because I was like, that's not insane. Like, it was a number where I was like, why would I even pull up to the spot? Like, and I know you can't think about it like that, because like, what's that orchestra, Cincinnati Symphony, their last viola audition, they had like 200 odd violas. Like, it's insane. And everybody wants to take Cincinnati because you get paid a lot of money to live in a city that's like relatively cheap to live in. But that you're not, no orchestra is looking. You could put up orchestra audition and it's $25K and you're gonna get a sizable amount of people going down.
So, talk about shit I do not miss. That's crazy.
Like, you're making less than minimum wage and you're gonna get a lot of people coming down for that audition. No orchestra is looking for talent. They can act like they are. Oh, we weren't able to find nobody. No. No orchestras looking for talent. Somebody want to challenge me on that idea? I love a little. No, I actually don't. Like a back and forth. I would like to hear.
I was about to say.
Yeah, like let me not lie. Let's not lie. But I would love to hear. Like I would love to hear the rebuttal to that. You want to? Some people love texting me little stuff. Text me and be like, "Girl, I don't think so."
No, I'm just playing.
I was just never. Let me not say that.
No link can get in the description.
I just be like, my job be dropping when I be seeing my number in an email. Why you volunteer? Katie's your point of contact. That's not crazy. I think it's funny because I'm just like, if you know me like outside of work, that's hilarious. But like, I would love to hear the rebuttal of that. I mean, I might not answer, but like, I'm trying to find it. I was gobsmacked, and you told me it was like villain number 94, and I was like, that's not insane to you. So I don't remember what it was, but it was definitely something high. So I feel like, I don't want to be pessimistic, but like, the girls are just not in a place to start anything new. I don't really see, like, I think maybe in the next, what's it called? The next age or whatever. It's whatever that is. Let's see what the next presidential, the next president gives, and then we'll talk about what's next for us.
Well, anyway, that's the news this week. R.I.P. Now, me, R.I.P. 59 years is crazy. They was about to have a 60-year anniversary. They couldn't even hang on. They could not. They said, we can't go a moment longer. They said the money that it takes to type up this press release is already gone. That's crazy.
The fact that they couldn't even wait to the end of the season. The season is a month and a half. You have a month and a half left to the end of the season.
I didn't even realize that.
Like, that's the first thing that jumped out to me. Yeah, the season's over at the end of May. Damn. Like, at best. I feel like even that's generous. Really mid-May. Unless, you know, you one of them girls that go to June.
First of all, what I really want to look up is, I want to look up that tax form, see what they was working with. We can move on, though. While I do that.
Wait, the publicist reached out to Classically Black, or you read?
We got a press release.
Dang. How much they pay her for that? Yeah. It's sad. Sucks.
I wonder who knew before this. Like, is this a surprise to the musicians too? Because I know a couple of people in AYS. I just don't know if they were still playing with them. I just don't know. So I guess I could ask.
It's not funny. But on February 28th, they posted like on their Instagram, they're like, congrats to AYS fellow Ben Gunderson and winning a new job. Basically, like, y'all need to do the same. Like, follow his lead. Get a new job.
Because what y'all not finna get? Dang, they took everything down.
Yeah, but I'm saying they meant it. They didn't even leave it up for, like, you know how like some people, when they shut down, you can click on it and it will say, have a little pop up that's like, hey y'all, we damn bad. Okay. It says 404 not found. It's a little sad.
Somebody DM'd me because I posted on my story and was like, I mean, after the situation planned, it was some concert. So I can't feel bad for them. I was like, okay, dang, they was probably struggling then too.
What happened?
I can tell you after.
You can't tell me out.
I mean, it's just not my business to tell, and I didn't inquire any further because I just was like, it was just an issue. Like, you know that one festival that you had an issue, that everybody had an issue with?
Yeah,
it was a similar situation. From what I could glean, it was that. But I was just like, they was probably also, it seemed related to the whole reason why they shut down anyway. It was probably
Moving their money from the checking to the savings. Savings.
So
oh my goodness.
So I'm like, so what's gonna happen? Because the middle is disappearing. People are paying musicians dust. Because someone else DM'd me and was like, oh, you know, I would think that they would have money. I'm like, I don't know why you would think that, because it's mid-tier professional orchestras paying people 30K.
At best.
Right. And that's up against living and having 100K in loans. So.
Yeah, the expectation is that I really feel like the expectation for an orchestral musician mid-tier orchestra is to ignore your loans, play for your salary, and teach a lot, or do something else and play in the orchestra. You either teach a lot, or like a lot of people do all type of stuff. A lot of people teach public schools. A lot of times, and a schedule is such that you can do those things. Rehearsals be, you know, in the evenings, except for like maybe a double or something like that. So. Because there's no way you're making 30K net plus, like, let's say you make an additional at best 20K teaching, at best teaching in gigs. So you're making 50K. How are you supposed to pay loans back?
And then don't let you live in an expensive city.
And even if you live in an expensive city, well, the orchestra in the expensive cities, like, those are different conversations, I guess, but
it depends if you are in the orchestra in that city.
Yeah, that's true. I think the expectation now is that you must do something else. You're teaching, you know.
At least here you have big film industry. That's a whole other industry that musicians can be heavily involved in, but in other expensive cities might not be that way. I mean, here go their problem right here. They uploaded their 990 since 2021. It was probably similar to, like, you know, when your teacher was giving the kids their quiz, right, with the paper turned over. Kind of like that. They probably turned in their thing to the IRS and was like, so.
Biden shut them down a long time ago.
Not upload this. Dang. I mean, all up in their business. I mean, it's public. You can look up any nonprofit.
What to say?
Tax form. I mean, I don't got time to. Some of it is like in. I'll just be looking up people's salaries, really. Their executive director was making $87,000.
Make it 80K?
87.
I cannot hear you.
87. There's a bunch of information in here that we won't sift through right now, but if you want to, you can look it up.
Well, let's move on. So for the intermission, it's kind of tied to the movie, because like it opens up with the feature that we're talking about. It opens up with Bernstein like playing and like for a piece for his wife or playing something, and he was like, when he was done, he was crying, and he was like, oh, I miss her terribly. Blah, that's quasi. So I wanted to know, like, you said what? Yep. <That's good. laughs> And I wanted to know, like,
original screenplay.
They see. What'd I say? So I wanted to know if a piece of music ever made you cry, and what was it, and where were you, etc.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably been a couple that have made me cry, but then the one I was like, oh, well, of course that one was Seven Last Words of the Unarmed. I mean, you might need to check your pulse if you're not crying with that piece. And I didn't even see that one live. I watched it on YouTube because I have been avoiding it for obvious reasons. Didn't really want to hear it. But then it was something going on. And then I was just like, well, let me just see. So I was at home when I heard that one. But I do remember, because I was watching this, I wasn't really watching it, it was on. There's this docuseries on Netflix. I think it's called Trial by Media. And it's like, it, like, each episode is like one of those like trials that was, that had heavy media attention, just something like that. Mm-hmm. And one of them that I skipped, because I was like, no way in hell, was the shooting of Amadou Diallo in New York. And his were the words that I like broke when I heard them. His last words were, "Mom, I'm going to college." And I was like, and that was when I freaking lost it. Yeah, that piece really did me in. It really did me in. I will never hear it again. I'm so sorry. I can't even tell you what it sounded like. I can't.
Yeah, I remember, like, because I played that piece. Like, I think I was avoiding it as well. And then Morehouse College, like, I forgot what their choir is called. I think they're Glee Club. I don't know. They came to Rochester, so they needed, like, instrumentalists. So I played that piece. And, like, I never want to play it again. like, respectfully, I never want to play it again. Like, and I'm not really like a crier. I can be whining. It just depends on like what day. But I was just so numb by it, because it's just like, it's insane. Like, Mama going to college. Like, it's just like, yeah. I never want to play. I don't want to hear that piece again. I don't want to play it again. I wish him the best. Thompson.
Joel Thompson.
Wish you the best. Very nice guy. Godspeed. I would not be playing that piece again. And luckily, it's too much. And I feel like luckily I'm in a place where, like, even if it was programmed, I'm not the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth person that would have to go through lots of videos before they get to me. Cause I think it's like, I don't know. I think it depends how you program it. How you do it, but it's not a lot of strings really. So watch now, because I said the same thing about Brahms 2, and I played Brahms 2 like 4 times after that. So
see,
can't wait to play it. Woo, so exciting. Oh my god. Great, can't wait. My piece that because I'm not really like, I don't know, I want to be moved to tears by, like, I'm not often moved to tears by music. Like, I think it's gorgeous, but like, definitely like the pot of dew from the Nutcracker. I was watching what's it called, the Joffrey Ballet. I went to see them in like 2017 or something like that, and I'm sitting in the audience and it came on, the music is just so pretty, I started crying. I did. I was like, this is so gorgeous. Oh my goodness. But that's not really typical for me. But I was definitely moved to tears. And I don't think, like, obviously they were doing a good job, but it really wasn't about like the ballet dancers. It's just like the music is so good and it's so moving. So yeah. And but also, like, my eye might twitch a little bit anytime I play the Negro National Anthem in orchestra. I might get a little twitch, as I honorable mention, but yeah, cool. Well, moving on.
Okay, well, as y'all know from our social media, we had a movie night this past week during which we watched Maestro finally, because it came out on streaming like right around Christmas, and what we was not finna do was that, because I think it came out on Netflix on December 22nd. I was like, okay. And I guess there's no anticipation on the whole like Oscars thing, because we watched it after the Oscars. But just to give y'all a little bit of background, I mean, Maestro was the movie about Leonard Bernstein. I feel like the focus of it was, it was sort of focused on the relationship between him and his wife, just in his life, the role that she played in that their marriage played in his life, and it, rather than like a, oh, this is a straight, you know, like biopic of his whole life, it was sort of that period of them being together, and, you know, just after she passed, I think in the late 70s, and he passed in 1990, so he lived for quite a bit after after she passed away. So yeah, what did you think of it?
You said that it was about, like, whatever. I'm looking up the log line because I want to know. I have so many thoughts.
Well, we'll balance each other out then.
Okay, my show is a towering and loveless, the towering and fearless love story chronicling the lifelong relationship between Lena Bernstein and Felicia Montalegre. Okay.
I'll pull up the log line. Or do you not think it was that?
No, because one of my main issues with it was it wasn't really about him. But yeah, I can zoom in now. I still have notes. So it just took away that annoying. I mean, I'm not really annoyed now that it's not about him. I think, like, it's a choice to release a movie. Has there been a movie about Bernstein before?
Like a biopic? I don't know. Maybe something. Probably something.
Yeah. Because because I can see, there's something I do like about, like, taking a very specific aspect of someone's life and, like, expounding it into a movie. I think that's really cool. But, like, to take someone, like, as iconic in Bernstein and kind of just focus on, like, this relationship between him and his wife and, like, not even really do it well, I just thought it was, like, fun. Like, and I saw, like, Jen had said she didn't like it, and I was like, we'll see. I can see why. Like, it's just, because when it first started, I was like, okay, I could get into it. Like, he's young, he's attractive, he's suave, whatever. I just wanted it to be more about him. I thought he was way more interesting, and even the way they portrayed the relationship, the relationship between him and his wife were written, specifically how it was written, not the acting. I thought the acting was great, but, like, how it was written, it just was, like, it just didn't connect for me. But, like, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, I knew that didn't occur to me only because I just knew that was the approach that they were taking, that it was, especially from the preview, and then I probably read something about it. I just knew that it was about them together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. More than just, like, a straightforward biopic. Yesterday was crazy. I was literally, like, I don't know if y'all know that meme. It's like that dog that's, like, waking up or, like, whatever. It's like coming, it's in, like, the car, and it's, like, coming into view, and it's, like, all disheveled and stuff. That was me turning on this movie yesterday. And to be honest, this is not the type of movie I would watch. I'm not really a movie person in general, so it's not something that I would normally watch if it was not for this. And I don't really know anything beyond, like, very basic things about Leonard Bernstein. So I was trying to connect, basically. So I don't think it was bad. I think that by the end of it, I did think that I was like, I might could learn me a little something, like a little something else about him. There was nothing that I really went into it, though, wanting to know. And so I think that it was kind of impossible for my expectations to be not met, because I feel like I didn't really have any. I thought the acting was great. I'm curious about the choice to have a lot of the film be in black and white, mm-hmm, as well. And
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting that you mentioned expectations, because I didn't have any either. You see, I didn't even read the log line. I didn't watch a preview. I didn't see any discourse on social media. Like, I literally, like, we're doing Maestro, great. I'll turn it on at 7 p.m. and we'll go from there. So I'm just, like, learning about it in real time. I think I know just enough about Bernstein. I think I know maybe a little bit more just because, like, I forgot what I was doing, why I needed to, like, research him a little bit. I forgot what maybe I was, I can't remember if I was, like, talking about him, talking about something related to him, if I was writing about something related to him. But it's just, like, he did a lot of cool stuff. He advocated for Black musicians, especially when he was at the New York Phil. He worked with the Black Panthers. Like, there's a lot
about that on the show.
Cool things about him. So I think it was just like when it started off focusing on him, I mean, starting off is like generous considering the fact, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes in he met Felicia, maybe 10-7, I don't know. I was just like, oh, okay, so then fine, that's not what the movie was supposed to be about, fine, there's plenty of other things to talk about. I thought the storytelling was disjunct. So I like, okay, maybe I was, and I was paying attention because some, I know we had to like tweet through it, but mm-hmm. So I wasn't doing anything else. I wasn't doing nothing else. I was just watching.
Can you imagine?
It's like, so, but sometimes I'll be a little, you know, whatever. So, okay. So I started out very strong. They met. I love a meet cute. I think I even said that. I love a meet cute moment. They met. Blase Squaze. Very good. When did her disdain, it wasn't clear when her disdain started for him and his schedule. It wasn't clear, like, she kept saying, there was a line or something, like, I, like, to the effect of, I know exactly who you are, I know whatever. It's like, it just left too much, I know about Bernstein, it left too much to a first time person who's learning about Bernstein to, like, figure out. That didn't make a lot of sense. And then, to what degree are you okay with him, you know, living his life? Because old dude with the silk press, like, when he was kissing on him, like, you ain't even say, like, it was a thing, but, like, I thought you were cool with it, because I thought she was cool with it the whole time. So when she flipped out in the hallway, she didn't flip out, she literally was like, oh my god, my man is out here kissing, like, whatever. And this is like, and then it's like his sister was like weirdly in on it, because she was like, oh, that's just how Lenny is. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me, because she was so accepting of him and being like continuously like outside of their marriage. It never clicked to me, like, where the disdain set in for him. Because you said that you had your own career, you know that he'd be, you know, a little loose, like, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere now you're telling this man he's gonna die alone. I was lost. I can't lie. I was lost. And it's like, there was just wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough evidence. There wasn't enough anything for us to be like, oh yeah, she's sitting at home alone with the kids, so I could see where she mad about that. There was no montage of her being alone, having to lift heavy. Like, they had nannies and stuff. Like, so there was literally no evidence except for like one Thanksgiving. He's and then where was he? Was he with like another man? Was he with another woman? It was just so, the screenwriting was just so unclear to me. Like, there's no way it under any, there's nothing for me to be like, okay, I can see why this woman is upset and that's why their marriage is slowly falling apart. Like, so it just didn't, the buildup didn't make any sense to me. And then all these random men that were never explained to even me, who I would want a little brush. I mean, I know Copeland, he was hanging out with Copeland, but all these other men that were never explained, I was like, who's old dude with the silk press? Somebody corroborated that. They're like, we don't know who he is. Nothing is explained. Nothing is written out. Nothing is like, I just thought it was like, I'm just watching at this point. I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess I can fill in the blanks and be like, okay, he's gone a lot. But gone doing what? He's down the street at the New York Phil. That's what we're assuming. And then, or he's at Tanglewood. And in me, I don't know. What if I didn't know what Tanglewood was? Is he at Tanglewood all the time? Where is Tanglewood? What is Tanglewood? I thought it was a little, I don't know, I just thought it wasn't really well written. I don't know.
I don't know. Some of the stuff I could see, some of it, I should have been taking notes now, because not on the movie, about what you just said, so that I could organize everything. When you say, who are these random men? You're talking about not just the men that he was sleeping with. You're talking about also, like, I know you said, you mentioned Copeland. You're talking about just who was there,
right?
In general,
yeah. Like, cause like, whatever. Like, he had men around him, but it was like they were literally never explained. he was like, oh, Aaron. I'm like, okay, cool, that's Copeland. The other guy, who was that? That it was like he was sleeping with at the beginning of the movie when he met Felicia.
Oh.
We still don't know who that is. When his daughter was talking to that man at the party and she was like, oh, dad said I can go to this thing. What? Turns out the whole time it's Tanglewood. How are we supposed to know that? And who was this man? Like, you know what I mean? And I understand, like, there's some ideas where, like, you literally can't, like, you should not write. And now we're going to get up and go. Just go to get up and go. But I think that was just like normally in screenwriting, you wouldn't say, like, I'm going to pick up my phone now. That should be like, there's no reason to say that. You could just pick up your phone. But I think there was like too much left out. Like the story just seems so disjunct to me in so many ways.
One, I was like, oh, he was when he was eating with Kusavitsky, I was like, oh, that's Kusavitsky. Hey.
How did you know that?
He said, well, maybe it was because I had, actually at one point, I knew it because I had on subtitles and it said Kus, but right after I found it, he said Kusavitsky.
When?
When they was eating. Him and his wife.
They were eating.
It was Kusavitsky and his wife. And I also looked it up just to make sure, but yeah, one of his wife's name was Olga. He called her Olga. And he said
Kusavitsky. When they were eating in the garden.
Mm-hmm. And they were Russian. The Russian people, and it was
oh he said he never went to Moscow because he or whatever.
Yeah, and then I also then they were talking about Tanglewood. I'm like, I mean I knew that, but he did say Kusavitsky at some point.
Oh, see, I'm like, who is this man?
Yeah. Now with some of the other men, like the man he was sleeping with, who he was using that he was using his booty shakes as timpanis.
I was like, when I saw that, I was like, well, it's going to be a movie, period. Like, I was like, where are we going? What are we doing?
Some of the other men that he was involved with, when us not knowing who they are, honestly, I'm kind of like, why? I don't really know that, like, why we need to know who they are. Because I feel like the point is that it sucks, but, like, it doesn't matter who it is. He can't get what he needs in his marriage, and he's looking to all of the he has someone in his marriage who he loves so much, and that, like, I think the point is showing, like, how they can be soulmates in a way, but there's just something that he cannot get from her. And it is kind of crazy how frivolous he can be outside of the marriage, because that thing that he cannot get from her, he could get it from basically anyone else outside of the marriage, who of course who is a man, but like there's something very specific that he needs from her emotionally in their marriage, and that's what makes them soulmates. And one of the things that did tie it up for me, and I tweeted it because it was very heartbreaking, what did she say? She said I forget who she was talking to. I think it might have been the sister. When she was talking about how this, like, disdain grew for him and stuff in their marriage. Because I feel like I don't have a lot of opinions on the timeline in terms of, like, how it unfolded. But in terms of, like, when did her disdain start, I felt like it was just kind of this, like, I want to say erosion, but I think your point is that, like, we didn't get to see the progress of it, right?
And it's not even like the progress of it. It's just, I didn't even know where it started. You know where it started? Because maybe I missed it.
I don't know where it started. I think, okay, this is the quote that I say shed some light on it, when she said, "It was my own arrogance to believe that I could survive on what he could give."
She ate that up. That was crazy.
Was so sad. And I think I think that's why it unfolded the way that it did, because there is no clear part of where it started. She wanted to be accepting for him because she knew that he needed that from her, because he wasn't getting it from anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And but she's also still human, and so she has these moments that may seem to come out of nowhere, because like you said, we think that she's okay with it, and she's trying to be okay with it. And that's the tension there. Is that she's trying her best to be okay with it, and she's trying to tell herself, she even said in that scene, I have all this other stuff going on, I have, you know, like, I don't,
I don't need to be up under him. Basically, I have a job. I have all these things. But she's realizing that when she's seeing it in certain moments, it really cuts her deep. And I can't do this. Like, I think that the whole thing is a push and pull. And it's not necessarily a like, dang, I don't like you no more. It's like she's kind of, I feel like she got one foot on either side of the line. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes she steps over and then sometimes she steps back over the other way. And that explosive fight that they had was her stepping over when she said, "You're going to die, an old queen." I was like, whoa. Okay. That. Okay, girl. That was.
I guess. I don't know. I see what you're saying for sure. I would just love, because obviously, like, really good storytelling. You don't have to. I don't want it to be like, oh, Kaden needs to be spoon-fed, go back to Disney Channel Jr. You know, like, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It's just that, like, it just seems so disjunct to me because I'm just like, there was no inclination that she was unhappy with it to the very end of the movie, and I think that's a little unfair. Like, maybe I missed something. Obviously, like, that's not fair. There were some things, maybe, like, when he brought Silk Press around to the house, and she was like, why is he here? You know, sure. Like, obviously you could tell now, like, there is something starting to break down. So I will say that it just felt like kind of like, how do we get here? Cause I'm over here thinking like, oh yeah, we cool with it. And I guess like that is like the revelation of it, but I don't know. It just wasn't very satisfying because it kind of felt like I was being, like, I was being, like, told a story. Like, this is, Lenny gets to do whatever he wants. Felicia doing her little acting thing, so it doesn't really matter. You know? That's kind of how I felt. And then also, just me, like, I just kind of wanted to know, like, more about, like, obviously he alluded to it at the beginning when he was, like, that line about him, like, I used to dream about killing my father, and I would wake up and fantasize about it. Because he was so cruel. Is that why he acts the way he acts? Well, we never know why. We never learned why. Because especially to the point that, like, he met this guy. He was like, oh, my God, your hair. Oh, my God, like, you're so, should we go to the roof? It's been 2 seconds. So, hey, hi, hello, what's your name? You know, so it's like, why? I want to know more about the character. Like, why is he acting like this? Because I feel like that would, even if it's about the relationship, that would inform the relationship. Why is he like this? There's no backstory on him except for that snippet. And when there was one other part where they're like, you know, he's had a hard time or whatever. And it's like, with what? I want to know. You got to tell me.
Did you feel that way when he first met her in the beginning of the movie?
About what?
Like, the, like, way, I don't know anything about him. About what you just said about how when he first met old dude with the silk press and was like, oh my goodness, and he was just, did you feel the same way when he met Felicia at the beginning?
He was the same with Felicia. He was just like, and maybe he just moved fast, but he married her. So because at the beginning of the movie she was like, oh my God, you're beautiful, okay, what are we doing now, we getting married?
And you know what, I feel like that also that wraps that back around too, of not why he acts like that, but why, when you're talking about like all these random men, like who are these men? It seems like even the way he acted with her in the beginning, like it's the new shiny thing. And that's why he's so interested in it. Once he gets interested, he's so interested.
Yeah.
And that would explain the revolving door of men, in addition to the fact that he is repressed and is having to live this like secret life, which is not so secret because he was all down that man's neck in the middle of the hallway,
in the middle of the
leading him away by his hand and caressing his hair and all that mess. And what was when she walked in on him kissing the dude with the silk press in the hallway, that was the first, was that the first thing we saw of her being upset?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was the first time. And now I'm trying to think, is that the only thing she was mad about? That he couldn't, like, she was almost like, quote unquote, not enough for him? Because his daughter, like, one of the kids, maybe not his daughter, but one of the kids was like, Dad, we didn't think you were coming to Thanksgiving. It's like, why? It's like,
I don't know. I don't know. There's maybe let me watch it again, but it's like, why would you think that? He's obsessed with his kids, literally obsessed with them. Mm-hmm. Why would you think that he wasn't coming to Thanksgiving? What is that about? You know, I didn't understand that. And like, also like, I just want to say, I understood it like in that I have a brain, but we are talking about it on a podcast. I have to have opinions on it. I can't be like, it was good. So that's what I was literally like, I'm not searching for things to pick at. It's just like, I watched it with a different lens because I knew we had to talk about it. Just want to make that clear just in case someone was like, girl, you slow. But I just didn't, I was confused by that part because I'm just like, he's obsessed with his kids. Why do you think he wouldn't be there? And I wanted to see more of the story, especially because I just also found it to be confusing because there'll be like these great, which I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, I'm like, I could listen to Candy fine, but it's like, we have like these super long scenes of him conducting. And it's like, I thought, so it's about that also muddies the waters. Cause like, I thought it was about them. Like, why are these scenes so long?
Really? How many were there? Not me dozing off in the middle. Hold on. No, I'm
like,
just kidding.
Like two or three.
Because I remember.
Could have took this time to do something else. I want to know more about how they got there. I want to see more of it.
Because I remember that one, like, main, that long one where he was like, oh, I didn't think he was coming. And when she came.
At the end.
Mm-hmm. Towards the end. Mm-hmm. I remember that one because assistant concert master, she knew that camera was on her the way she was playing.
She looked familiar. I don't know why she looked like familiar.
With the whole thing about how he is acting too, and I wonder, this is total speculation, but I feel like, I mean, we have this sort of like idea of what artists are like. They're these like weird eccentric people. Mm-hmm. And seeing him in these like long conducting scenes, I feel like that like super outgoing and just like over the top emotional character that he had, I feel like conducting was a place that he had that he could like express that in not be questioned. And that's why I really what made me like, okay, I actually found my curiosity about Leonard Bernstein beyond like any other things that I knew about him before when they showed him actually at the end for the credits, because like it just to hear about all that, to see all that like turmoil in that, like, especially in the marriage, I guess I wonder how other people feel about like not knowing much about the man himself and coming into this movie that's like about the marriage. Like, how much, I'm trying to think of other movies like that where you're focusing on a relationship and how much do you need to know and what would be helpful to know about what those characters are coming into a relationship with.
There was a limited series, I think it was called like An American Marriage on HBO. And I think like that kind of like ruined romance writing for me, because it was like, obviously limited series is special because you're talking about like 6 to 8 episodes where you can, it's like three times the length of a feature, so you really get to sit with characters. And I found like the way it's written is just so profound because you have to like sit with these characters and like all their stuff, and you have to like, so it starts out and you're like, why are these people acting like this? Why is this couple like, what's wrong with y'all? And you think they're getting better and then they don't, and then you think they're getting better and they don't, and then they break up. And then, but through that, it's like, excuse me, you learn like all of your, not all of your baggage maybe, but like a lot of your baggage informs how you're in a relationship. So, and it's like seeing that and also having to sit with emotions with them, like you felt like you was in that room with them. It's like, dang. And it's like, I watched that 2 years, like 4 years ago rather, and I just haven't forgotten it because I want to see more. I just feel like it's too much was left up to the imagination for me in their dynamic. And obviously, like, everything came together at the end because, like, unfortunately, like, she got cancer, and wherever he was at, and, like, she kicked him out or whatever, it's like now we got something to do. Like, now it's all hands on deck. So I thought that was really beautiful, but I don't know. I just felt like a little lost in there from, like, when they were madly in love, and, like, how did it start to fray, you know, and also, just to be clear about, like, random men, I'm not just talking about his partners. I'm talking about, like, his friends, like, the people that he brought around. And, like, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe I'm a nosy person, but, like, I just want to know more about the world. I don't know. I think the world should be really believable, and I want to know every detail about your world, especially. And I think also, I wonder if I would feel this way if it was about someone else. Like, I just think Bernstein is just so fascinating. Like, he's so fascinating, and it's like, I don't know. I would even if it's supposed to only be about their relationship, it's like, I still want to see more of him, and I wish more time was taken for that, because he's I don't know, that's a really, he was a really cool man. So
yeah, I mean, that's why, I mean, when we talked about some of the friends too, I don't think I have an opinion on the whole random men thing as it pertains to his lovers, but not so much the people that were around him. And I also wonder, like, okay, if it's about their love story, when we talk about, like, background, is there anything about her character that you feel the same way?
Honestly, not really. I have to think, like, I think I say not really because, one, I think, like, she was, like, the most, we got to hear and see the more of her feelings about, like, the marriage. And we got to see Bernstein, like, be Bernstein and, like, conduct or whatever. But I think I heard more from her about, towards the end, about, like, how she felt about it and, like, her feelings towards him. I just didn't understand how we got there. Hmm.
I'll be interested to hear, I mean, someone's opinion about how, someone who maybe has worked in both film and TV, about that. Because I'm actually, now I'm like, I wonder why I don't feel that way. I think it also might come down to just the type of stories that both of us like or are drawn to. Because I vastly prefer TV to film. Mm-hmm. And so some of these may be like, stories that might feel truncated a little bit to some people. I'm kind of surprised, like, why some of that stuff doesn't really stick out to me. Like, even though I am used to, like, having what you were talking about, having to sit with characters for a long time over the course of a series, I didn't really feel like all of the, like, pretty most of the things that we've talked about, I felt like were in the emotional subtext of the situation that they were in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I just wish it wasn't. I think, like, I don't like having to do, I don't like having to do heavy lifting when I'm watching something, no matter if it's supposed to be highbrow, what's the actual word for it? Highbrow, high concept or not. Like, I think the viewer was left to do too much heavy lifting, and that's what I didn't like. Because I'm watching, I'm like, how did we get there? And it's like, yeah, you can infer. Of course you can infer. Like, oh, well, she said, like, my ego got in the way. I wasn't enough. Like, of course you could be like, okay, well, well, she thought like it, she could make it work, but I just feel like it just jumped way too much from my taste. I wanted to see, and maybe I just like when we sit with characters more. Maybe that's why, like, I also prefer TV to film, because you over seasons you watch characters grow, versus like you really only have 90 minutes to do that. What, not in this case, but whatever. Similarly, and so yeah, I think yeah, of course, like it, the emotional subtext is there. You can infer like how we got there, but I want to know more about why. Like, I want to know. A lot of things were alluded to, like, oh, that's just how Lenny is. I feel like that's not really fair, because like obviously, like, you can't call someone like peculiar or whatever and then just leave it to the viewer to figure out why. Especially like we're watching it. For me, in my opinion, we're watching it. We're not reading the script. We're not reading a play. We're not reading a novel, because I think that's some of the fun of like reading a novel is you have to go back and figure out, okay, like what clue was this? And I don't really like doing that when I'm watching something. And it doesn't have to be like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, but I would like a little bit more something just to make this story seem less jumpy.
I feel like the why he was at least like peculiar, that word be messing me up. I kind of look to the situation that he is in. Maybe that's a surface level analysis of it, but anyone who is like this artistic personality that is suppressed in the way that he was, I feel like that sort of like spinning out of control in this very like destructive way that is painful to the people around you is what I saw his character as. I saw it as like he has this very like upbeat personality and stuff like that. And yeah, there was the hint about his dad being cruel. Maybe we don't know why, but what we do know is the context he's in, both like the time period that he lived and stuff like that, and like we know that he's in the public eye and all this other stuff. And I think that he's a big personality that could not be as big as he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why he was the way that he was. And I think that's why I think the erosion of their marriage also came from that, because somebody has to, I guess, take the brunt of that. And of course he was suffering internally, but his wife sort of being the smaller personality, and like she said, that was her downfall, in that thinking that she, because she was this smaller personality and because she was the more like stable one between the two of them, that she could take that on. And it just came to a point where she had to look back and was like, oh, I made a mistake in thinking that I could do that. And in the same way that he did not really, and I don't want to put it on him because obviously he was going through, but like in their marriage, she was not allowed to be she was not allowed to have like this full consideration as a person in this marriage. It was not very 50-50 from what we saw in terms of like emotional needs being met. I forgot what I was gonna say. But basically, that's the way I saw it. Like, I saw it as that quote, I was just kind of like, dang, I had to tweet right after that, because there is like sort of a, I don't want to say point of no return, but it is kind of a point of no return when she gets that cancer diagnosis, because then it's even more like their marriage is ending one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see him show up for her in that way, but I think it was this kind of like soulmate story, but there's this big thing that one of the souls is dealing with, and it could never, in the same vein of that quote, it just could never work out the way that I'm sure both of them would think it would be easier if it could work out that way.
Yeah, and maybe it's worth a rewatch on my end just to see, but like, I just don't remember. And maybe like, because I didn't have any expectations of like what this movie was going to be about, I felt like I set myself up to be disappointed about how little I got to know more or how much I knew about Leonard Bernstein, like being portrayed through the film, because like which part gave like he's like a tortured, because that argument caught me off guard, because when she called him like, you're gonna be a lonely queen, I said, whoa, like, and she's like, you say you love people like, and you don't even whatever, and I'm just like, I'm paying attention, how did we get here? And maybe like, maybe it's biased. I love Bernstein. Like, my conducting professor talked about him endlessly. His freaking license plate says maestro. Like, so maybe there's a bias there, but I'm just like, why are we being mean to Bernstein? Like, I'm like, yo, you say he can have legitimate callers. You said he's obsessed with you. He's obsessed with his children. So I think I'm lost. At the party, of course, because first of all, like, I was like, you stronger than me, girl, because my man, you obsessed with me, you not. So it's like, I was at the party, I'm like, you doing it, like, you out here, you know, you can't even control yourself. We're at a party, like, our kids are here, like, and you stepping out on their mama, like, there's people here, there's people about. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, I was like, why are we being mean to Lenny? That it just caught me off guard. So, and maybe I'm wrapped up in how charismatic he is and whatever. I have to rewatch. And I also said I was going to read he has something on Amazon, memoir or something. I said I was going to read it because I want to get inside of his mind, because obviously, like, he made a comment that made me kind of be like, well, I hope that's not me, about like how artists are like, they live like this really vibrant internal world, and they have like, I'm paraphrasing, and like a very like dull external world. But like, nothing about him gave, wow, this sucks to me. Like, he doing what he wants. He's smoking cigs. He got friends. He conducting. He got his man. He got his girl. Like, I thought we was living. I thought we were having a good time. The fight car, I can't lie. We having a good time. He going around town. He's Bernstein. Oh my God, it's Bernstein. He making jokes in the street, talking about I slept with both your parents. I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying. It's Thanksgiving. Daddy, I didn't know you were coming to Thanksgiving. Whoa, hold the phone. And maybe like, and I can, while you were speaking, I'm like, I'm going back through the movie in my head. I'm like, okay, there were moments where I could, cause I'm not freaking slow. I could see, like, I thought the TV interview was awkward. Where like, he knew none of her engagements and she knew all of them. But I was like, okay, whatever. When she had cancer at the end, she was like, someone was like, where's Lenny? He's like, I don't know, sleeping or something. Like, things are coming back to me. But like, I just thought the whole like, oh, there's rumors at Tanglewood and she's like, don't tell nobody. That, I felt bad for him, because it's just like, why I gotta lie to my daughter about who I am. Like, I thought that was weird. So I could see moments of where he might have felt like othered and whatever, but I thought we were vibing. So it's worth the rewatch to me, because I just thought it just jumped around too much. I thought we were having a good time, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I don't know, I thought like your man be, I thought it was like an open marriage on one side. That's kind of what the vibe I got, until she didn't want to do it anymore, which is fair, but it just came out of the blue to me.
Well, I feel like if the first thing we saw was them making out in the hallway and I felt like she was upset by that, then I could tell that she did not want that to happen. Mm-hmm. And then when you progress and we see that the same dude that he was in the hallway with, and also when he was holding hands with him when they was at that opera, and she was staring at them holding hands, and then he was also at home with them playing these board games and stuff like that. That was her trying to accept what he had going on, mm-hmm. which was like, girl, oh my goodness.
You better than me. I had to remind myself the time period, because I was like, my what's called alimony and my kids and going about my business.
And that's the thing that's like, what am I keep losing my my train of thought, but there was basically, when I saw that with the whole like, oh, he got his girl, he playing with his, you know, he doing his symphonies, he got his girl, he got his man, like whatever, my mind went to like, I did not see that as him vibing, only because I didn't see it as a life that he would choose. I saw that as a necessity. You have to have the wife in order for you to have the men around the back door, because you're somebody in the public eye, and it was clearly like, it was a secret. It wasn't a secret well kept, but it was still a secret. And so that, and I saw that.
See, now I can't remember, because that's why I was so confused as well. I thought everybody knew Lenny, you know, I thought people knew that.
It was probably a quiet,
a open secret.
Yeah, it was probably an open secret, but like, he couldn't, being like, out would be, I felt like would be.
Yeah, that's true. He makes me like, I don't know why I always thought Lenny Bird, like, I just thought he was, well, yeah, Lenny, you know, I just thought that's how it was. Like, I don't know. I gotta go. Like, obviously, that's ridiculous, I guess, for the time period. But I don't know. I just thought because of his proximity. I mean, he's directed the New York Phil, so I just thought like, because of that, it just allowed him.
But I also think that's more. I mean, classical music is conservative now.
Yes, yeah, true.
So then I just feel like either way, even if it was a situation where they had an open marriage, even that would be frowned upon. Even if he was like, even if he had an open marriage and was sleeping with women. Yeah. Now, of course, they'd be giving people. It wouldn't have been like, oh my God, he wouldn't have been like,
it would
have
been in big trouble about?
Over that. That would have been like, oh yeah, yeah, your mistress is
like, yeah, right. I'm gonna say you'd have been dapping him up. What are you talking about? That's why I'm like,
what? But also in a conservative culture, even though it was happening, to be public about it, I think would have been frowned upon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw it as like, as more of a necessity, especially when you see him in a position of having to lie to his kids, when his daughter was hearing rumors and stuff like that, he's having to temper these like rumors and stuff like that. And dang, that was one of the things I was gonna say about just dang, I really wish it would, because I was saving it because I thought it was like, it was very interesting. But basically, it was something about like him. I feel like what we were seeing from him is like him living this sort of like reckless life out of it was about him like kissing that dude in the hallway, like, and how you were saying like, there are people here, like, you know, how he just like, it seems like to a certain point he was so suppressed he couldn't even hold it in, because he was getting, because she, I think she said, you're getting sloppy.
Oh yeah,
I think she said that to gather him.
Yeah.
And it's just like there were these moments that we saw, like, he's very charismatic, he's very like, he just seemed like, yeah, just a very charismatic person, because of that bubbly personality that he had. But because of that, like, because of being repressed, I feel like he sort of dipped into these sort of moral gray areas, like cheating on your wife. And it's not gray area, but you know what I mean, because of the position that he was in.
Yeah, yeah.
But like all of these reckless, all these situations that spawn from reckless behavior because of that, like having to lie to your kid, being sloppy about your affairs. And then at the end of the movie, when you're this old man, you in the club grinding up on your student, like that's obviously a crazy situation. You was just teaching old dude to how to conduct, and now y'all in the club, that's crazy at your big humongous age. But like, as somebody who, I think that was just one of those other moments that I kind of connected to, that moment in the hallway, because he was so like, it was just one of those like, what are you doing? The judgment is out of the window. And because you have this big personality that had nowhere to go, and it had, and for a long time it was going into his, like, being absorbed by his wife, I think. And then without her, that's why he was just so, like, lost. Because I feel like they were really soulmates, but they just, it just couldn't align because of the, it could have been both sexuality and I don't even know if he was monogamous. Maybe he also wasn't monogamous just in general. Maybe he couldn't even been monogamous with a man. We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it gave to me. I just thought that, I really just thought they was open. And maybe I have to go back. I'm going to read his stuff and see. Yeah, I would have liked a little more. I think for me still, just, I would have liked a little more of how we got here. Because obviously you can go back and like, oh yeah, of course. But that's just not what I really want. I think like, without holding my hand, I think there should just be something in the middle to be like, yeah, I don't know. I do know that there just needs to be more for me in the storytelling, because I thought the end was great. The ending was, because like you see him, it's like, dang, like your wife died and now you at Tanglewood and you living it up, but it's just like, all right, girl, this is sad, you scaring the hoes. But just leading from, I thought the beginning was great, and I thought the beginning was great. I thought the end of Act 2 and Act 3 were great. It's just like that little middle part for me that was like, I personally, I just need a little bit more. And I mean, like, maybe over the summer when I'm vibing, I might watch it again just to see. But I don't know. I don't really be watching movies twice, so I already know what happens. But just to go back and see for myself, I might.
Alrighty.
Well, that's it. We're moving on. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you think. It's the Justice for Lenny. Period. That's my boy. Love him. All right, y'all. Time for Black Excellence, where we hype you up, gas you up, and give you a prop. There's room for everyone at the top. Who are you talking about, Delaney?
Today, I am talking about Trent Johnson, who is an organist, composer, pianist, and conductor. He's a graduate of the Peabody Institute and the Juilliard School. He's the organist and assistant director of music at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City, and he's also the music director of the Oratorio Singers of Westfield, New Jersey, with whom he has played great choral masterworks, as well as with professional soloists, as well as the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra. He's an active organ recitalist, and he's performed recitals with many of the major churches, concert halls, and cathedrals of the United States, Europe, and Asia. His musical journeys have taken him to Germany, Holland, Belgium, France, England, Canada, Japan, Russia, and Ukraine. And he was also one of the four American organists that were invited to participate in the second International Organ Festival in Kiev. And you might have heard him on Jeopardy, because in 2006 he was invited to record the Think music for Celebrity Jeopardy. So shout out to him.
Congratulations, girl. I know that's a Kiev. I used to love Chicken Kiev before I went vegan. Shout out to Kiev. Anyway, my piece of the week is Candide. Yeah, I was listening to this morning. I was like, and then we was like, is that Candide in the end? And I was like, oh, he really ate that up. It's so good. I want to play it. It sounds fun. But yeah, thanks so much for listening to Classically Black Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Classically Black Podcast. If you have a piece of the week suggestion, a Black Excellence suggestion, or an intermission suggestion, then it's the classicallyblackpodcast@gmail.com. If you're Black, join ISBM for now. That's ISBM. Nope, that's IS Black Musicians on social media, isblackmusicians.com. Join the Ebony Tower. We got exclusive stuff over there. That's patreon.com/classicallyblackpodcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch y'all next week.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.